You're listening to the Nightlight Radio Network. This is Dr. Zohara Hieronymus, co-host of 21st Century Radio. We are happy to present this rebroadcast of our show on Nightlight. Enjoy. There are many ways to view ourselves as bodies, as minds, as souls. Essentially, though, we are light beings that respond to and take part in the frequencies of light, which in turn are the energetics of life and immaterial being as well. Joining us this hour is chiropractor Michael Weiner, whose book Light Medicine, Evolving Our Body, Our Life, and Our Planet, explores how deeply interconnected we are between our own beliefs, thoughts, and emotions, and those around us. Our own wellness or illness is simply being out of or in harmony with the universe and our own highest good. Light medicine posits that as light beings, all illness is an energetic imbalance that we have the ability to change. Healing, Michael writes, is not an end goal. It is a way of life, for as we correct our own imbalances, so too the world is restored to harmony. Thank you for joining us, Michael.
Hi, Joe. Nice to be with you.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting that you began your practice out there in Oregon as a chiropractor. So why did you choose chiropractic?
At the time was, you know, it was a holistic approach, and I thought it offered me the best opportunity to explore my other interests in conjunction with physical body healing. So, it just seemed like a good idea at the time.
Well, in your book, Light Medicine, Evolving Our Bodies, Our Life, and Our Planet, you state an overall philosophy and observation based in science as well as spiritual teachings that we're light beings. So how does viewing ourselves in this fashion change the questions we ask and then even the treatments we offer in healthcare?
Yeah, light is the most basic building block for our body. It's the most basic nutrient. It's how cells and atoms and molecules all communicate, and so we want to work on the level of light if we're going to realize our potential and establish health and well-being. If we don't work on the level of light, then we're kind of adapting to our issues, and emotional and energetic issues are the main way that that light disorders develop. And, we want to work on the level of light if we really want to get to the source.
Well, you suggest, I mean, you offer a lot of different exercises, and one of the things you talk about, as do others, is the not the challenge, but the desire, if one has it, to overcome emotional patterns that hold any one of us back from evolving. Explore this a little bit with us.
Yeah, emotion is, it's the key of all of our motivation. It's the energy behind everything we think, say, and do. So we do need to address our emotional patterns and our emotional issues directly. It's not possible to do that with a thought process or with, changing our programming or with supplements or whatever. We actually have to have an effective emotional process to deal with emotions. So it's affecting our motivation. And if we really want to change the direction of our life, if we want to change our health, we have to deal with things on an emotional level.
You wrote in, I don't remember where, but somewhere in your book, you wrote that autoimmune disorders are the result of having, quote unquote, foreign energies, unquote, in our energy field. So what do you mean by this?
Yeah, it's universal that we get other people's energy in our space. It's actually, if you start thinking about it, it's a huge, huge issue. Starts at a very young age. We got everybody's expectations. We get people's control. We get other people's goals and how they view us into our space. Judgments, perfectionism, all these patterns, we readily absorb them. People direct their own. When we don't have an emotional process, people direct their issues at each other and try to get their emotional needs met from other people. So there's this kind of emotional battle going on. And it's really, it's universal that we get other people into our space and we get in other people's space. And autoimmune disorders would typically be based on emotional patterns where we absorb other people's judgment or other people's perfectionism and then we start attacking ourselves. We're hard on ourselves and we judge ourselves harshly and so forth. And so, the thing is, it's hard to discover those patterns because By the time we're old enough to be aware of what we're doing, it sounds like our own voice, and so it sounds like it's us, and so it's very difficult to recognize that we're in fact dealing with other people's energy in our space.
And then how, let's say somebody listening to the audience says, I have a lot of fear in my life. I'm 65 years old. You know, I've done a lot of things. I don't know what to do now, or I don't have the courage to try something newer, or whatever it is. How does fear play into all of this, and particularly into physical illness?
Well, fear is another emotional issue. It could originate from other people very easily. There's a lot of fear in the world, so it's easy to get in our space. But the process would be to work on the emotions around that and to go into the fear, explore it. The tricky part with an emotional process is discerning what's yours and what's not yours. So if you try to go into an emotion and it's really your emotion, you'll be able to relax through it and resolve it. If it's somebody else's emotion that's in your space and you try to relax into it, you'll probably get stuck in it. So if somebody has fear, I would recommend they try to explore that feeling and move into it and just sort of play with it a little bit.
Is that true in general, in a general sort of way, about all emotions? The personal work one can do alone is simply to go into the feeling, allow the feeling to exist, and then to appreciate whether it's yours or something in the world or something you saw or something you heard?
So whatever the feeling is that's coming up, we want to move into it and then practice relaxation and try to relax into the feeling, let it start flowing. And again, if you feel like you're relaxing and it's either getting more intense and not moving, or it's just plain stuck there, then it's a pretty good indication that it's not your emotion. And then you've got to work on how you engaged with it, and that's
really fascinating. I've never heard, in all the therapists that I've interviewed in the 30-some years, I've never heard anybody talk about it energetically discriminating and so easily between whether the pattern originates with you or the pattern originates from outside of you, and that if it's outside of you, you get stuck in it. That's a really fascinating observation.
Yeah, and again, in terms of health issues, I mean, I'm actually at a place where I think that most, if not all, health issues revolve around how we engage with foreign energy and how much of it gets stuck in our space.
But the truth is, we know from an energetic point of view that you can stand next to somebody and your heart fields are interacting. Yeah. And that happens. It just happens. It's not like something we say, oh, great, I can't wait to feel your suffering today. Or, oh, gee, I know exactly how happy you are for your children by standing next to somebody. So, in fact, we're all always immersed in each other's presence.
Yeah, I think if you really want to look at our potential, I don't know that that's the ultimate achievement. I think that is what we all do. Yeah, I agree. It's just very easy to be in resonance with other people. It's part of our potential, part of our evolutionary potential to actually evolve our emotional state so that we really do discern what's ours and what's not ours and heal up our issues and let other people heal up their issues. And then we can connect in a healthier way. If we keep connecting through the issues, then they get all confused. And that makes all of our development slower.
Right. And we certainly perpetuate it. We see it culturally across nations. We perpetuate pain and suffering. You know, you push me and I'm going to push you. You lob a bomb and I'm going to lob a bigger bomb. And whether it's verbal or technological, it's really the same impulse of anger, retaliation, supreme misjudgment of what we're all here for. So when you do your work and your work that you've done as a healer, you're not alone in this belief that we can transform the patterns that our DNA themselves are giving us, and that DNA itself is changeable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, again, so the light is at the core of our being, and it's at the core of the physical world and so forth, and the genetic programming takes that light and changes how it gets expressed and worked with, and so life as we know it is a particular manifestation of light. If we look at the genetic programming and go, well, it's not really how we want to experience life or how we want to live, then we can in fact tap into that programming and alter it. And it's not, you know, a lot of, that's the coolest thing about using light as a stimulus is that it's very easy. If we narrow down the bandwidth with light, if we look at the sunlight or whatever, it's not specific enough to actually activate emotional issues. But if we narrow down the bandwidth, then we can actually access genetic programming and stimulate the issues that are there. And then we need an emotional process to actually evolve those patterns.
So whether you're healing with light or healing with sound, we're talking about healing with frequency rather than other kinds of chemical processes or other physical substances. And of course, the Hindu tradition and many others have long, in fact, every tradition has their own system of correspondences of what color each thing corresponds to. So there must be some sort of cultural component or cultural lens through which these associations happen, because they're not all the same in every culture. But when you talk about light healing, Dr. Weiner, do you talk about using light projectors? Are you talking about using gemstones? What is it that you have found is effective?
Actually, I think they all could be effective. I think there's many different dimensions of light. The two easiest ones to think about are the light of your imagination, and so visualization of light is very useful for activating issues and for healing processes. And then the other one is actual physical light sources. The easiest, cheapest one would be like color filters, which you can get at an art store. And then to work with specific frequencies, and there's a lot of variability, but even within a particular culture. But even on a given day, you might use one color for one of your organs and a different color the next day for the same organ. So, it depends on what issues are coming up and what needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. And I like that you mentioned that imaging color is a very powerful tool, which it is. And, of course, anybody who's ever studied light healing or the traditional ways in which healing has been used by color visualization will see that it crosses, it's global. It's a global phenomena that we're really sort of becoming reacquainted with in the last 50 years. When you look across sort of the landscape of the healing community you've been with or your own clientele, how prevalent do you think this understanding is becoming? I mean, I myself have been interested in this since the 1970s.
Yeah, I think I look around out in the world. There's a lot of work with visualization and the use of light. I think the thing that's crucial that I'm bringing to the community here, the healing community, is the use of the emotional process in conjunction with the light work. I think the emotional process is what actually does the healing. The light is a stimulus. It activates different issues. And then we have to use the emotional process to evolve it. I think a lot of what I've seen is the idea of using light as a nutritional supplement. Like we need a lot of red and we need some orange, and and in a way that's true because emotional energetic blocks do impact the actual amount of light that we receive. But it's the process that actually does the healing, and then that allows more light to enter into our body, and then open up new possibilities for our physical and emotional function.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, obviously you're not alone. And Rudolf Steiner often spoke about the digestion of light. The cosmic light is such an important aspect of our own development and why vegetarians often have a much higher awareness, because they're in touch with the cosmic light that is in the plant life, and that's actually what's giving us the nutrition, not just the potassium or magnesium or sodium or anything else that we might talk about as a chemical, that behind the chemical is the light. And so it's very interesting to me that when you think about how people are told to stay out of the sun, and yet most people are vitamin D deficient,
right,
and that there's something very significant about not honoring that we are light beings, and that this is really rudimentary to how we go about transforming our awareness and our behavior.
Yeah, absolutely. Even the physical light sources or the visualization of light, both of which work very differently, which is why we need to use both of those. But they both are sort of metaphors for the deeper light within us.
Mm-hmm.
And the light of visualization isn't exactly like the yang of light, but it gets us in that direction and allows us to bring in other aspects of our higher levels of light, and then the yin aspect of light is more with the physical light sources, and that also helps us tune into, again, a different aspect of light. But it all goes back to that light source. And again, ultimately, the goal, I think, is for us to shift out of our genetic program of survival and so forth, and shift to allow more and more of that the real light at the core of our being to come through and express our true light through our body, which is I think something that you and a lot of the other forward-thinking people are trying to facilitate.
Well, and it's so interesting, biogenealogy and biogenetics, that what we think to be our own suffering is sometimes the genetics of our ancestry coming through us, expressing itself through our limbs. But it's not just our limb history. It's blooded history that we've shared. And then when you think about reincarnational patterns of how many lifetimes of the work of Ian Stevenson, who is, Dr. Stevenson, has shown when children not only reincarnate and remember their past lives, but they have the wounds of their prior death of the last life, both the entry wound and the exit wound, as birthmarks or something. So there's something very prescient about the emotion that we associate with an experience actually affecting physiology. And I think that example in reincarnation shows us how profound it is, not just our day-to-day experience of, somebody gets angry at you and then your stomach hurts, or you have to go do something and say something to somebody that works for you and you don't want to because you don't want to hurt their feelings, and then your heart hurts because their heart hurts. And so it's even deeper and subtler than that.
Like you were saying, in the genetic, the genetic code carries the entire history of everybody, of all your ancestors. All their experiences are in there, and then you bring in your past life experiences, and so you've got a lot of stuff there, that a lot of patterns that we all can have to work on to actually get to a place where we can actually bring our light through instead of just live out our programming or our ancestors' programming.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Dr. Michael Weiner. His book, Light Medicine, Evolving Our Body, Our Life, and Our Planet. You can learn more at his website, Michael Weiner, WINER.com. And, of course, there's a link right on 21stCenturyRadio.com's website.
This is John G. Kruth from the Ryan Research Center in Durham, North Carolina, the oldest operating parapsychology lab in the country. You can learn more at Ryan.org. You're listening to Zohara Hieronymus on 21st Century Radio.
Michael, so it's not just a sense of an abstract discussion for some people, but a little bit more direct. You suggest that healing is about honoring the presence of our condition and, quote, assisting in the movement through that condition so we master whatever we gain from the experience, meaning that the experience of the journey is the important thing, not the label somebody's given to our disease.
And in that context, it's easy to think of healing as strictly getting rid of whatever the physical ailment or emotional ailment is, instead of, being with the process and moving through whatever. Healing for me is movement. And so if we... whatever we have to do to attain movement with whatever's going on is the path of healing, and not so much being fixated on the end result, although, of course, that would be important and good. But, each step of the way, each emotion that's there, each part of the process is crucial to feel it and move through it. And then, again, it's like, as usually with any illness, there's going to be many, many levels. And each of those levels need to be resolved to achieve the physical resolution, and so that's where the emotional process comes in. It's so crucial to be able to move through whatever it is we're experiencing. And again, since a lot of emotional experiences and physical experiences are related to foreign energy in our space, we need to be able to recognize what's ours, what's not ours, and then to learn how to separate from what's not ours to resolve those issues. So we're actually going for the movement, and the healing is...
It's very interesting, because when you speak with shamanistic cultures and certain kinds of healers, have been able, it's not necessarily advisable, but you listen to them talk about the energy of the individual being moved through their body in order to change the energy of that other person. And it's an interesting phenomena, because when a mother, you know, shows love to a child and puts her hand on the boo-boo, her love literally changes the cellular situation of the child. So when you talk about an individual healing themselves and moving through sort of the journey of obstacles, you basically the obstacles become the opportunity for healing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, we want to embrace the steps as, yeah, the path. The path is through the blocks.
Right, which means when we run into one, that's the thing we should be looking for. But, of course, we look for the easy way. We go, well, that's not one I want to look at.
Yeah, we got lots of techniques. We got lots of ways to run away from it. You know, a lot of our activities, whether it's entertainment or, you know, we got lots of or work or whatever, we got lots of ways to distract ourselves from the issues and try to avoid them. And we have so many defenses in our culture and in the world in general, and just defense-based, you know, because there is very little process going on, and most people are looking for an easy way to avoid their stuff, and so we got, you know, sugar, alcohol, cigarettes, TV, you name it. But yeah, it is possible to move through other people's issues. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, like you're saying, I don't think it's that advisable. It's too easy to get stuck in those issues. And,
yeah, exactly. I mean, they used to call that possession on another level. You know, it's interesting because I love a comment you made, which I share many of your observations, that when we heal a problem from a past relationship, you write, the changes we make affect the other person as well. And that doesn't even mean we ever see the other person again. Share with us when you look at that, at, you know, how significant it is, because I've always found that forgiveness changes not only the effect of the past on us, but it changes the effect on the past on everybody.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're still connecting through whatever issues are there, even if we never see the person again. So, so it's really up to us to resolve all those issues from the past so that those relationships are brought into present time. And maybe there will not be a future in that relationship, but at least the energy is in present time. It doesn't get carried forward. So if we're connecting through an unresolved issue, typically, you know, one person, typically both people have, you know, there's some kind of energy that's being wrestled with. Either it's something that somebody wanted or something that somebody's trying to get away from, and they're throwing energy back and forth. And that's a typical, obstacle in a relationship. And then, if you resolve your side of it, if it's not your energy, then it ends up back in the other person's space, and they're going to have to deal with it. And if it is your issue and you move through it, then, again, you've taken kind of a point of conflict out of the relationship. So,
well, one of the things you talk about in terms of this notion of being able to discern what's your own, what somebody else's, what's your spouse, what's your coworker, what's the TV show you just watched, what's, you know, the story you heard while you were in the grocery store, how much is that in, is making healthy boundaries. And it occurred to me in listening to you talk that all of our social media is really eviscerating a sense of boundary making.
It kind of getting back to something you were saying earlier, where it's so easy, especially for someone who's sensitive like yourself or myself, to feel what's going on with other people around us and to experience all the things they're going through. And, I don't think it's not a healthy thing, because we can't really go through other people's issues very easily. So it's healthier to learn what's ours, what's not ours, separate from what's not ours. And instead of passing the emotions around to everybody and everything.
Well, they're contagious. I mean, as much as any virus, they are a virus.
Yeah. Foreign energy, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And there are emotional plagues. I mean, and it's so interesting because consciousness as a component of reflecting emotion actually changes matter, whether it's, you know, positive prayer or something that's more nefarious of wishing harm for somebody, that these are real energies, and we all know it. We can feel it when we walk in a room or meet somebody who gives us a really just a bad feeling. You know, you don't want to be next to them, or you don't, you know, there's something dark about, or whatever it is. And so all of us have this intuitive sense about quote-unquote energy, but do we listen to it? Share with us your own observation, like of the Western culture. Do people listen to their bodies in our culture?
No, I don't mean, you know, I think if you really look at people's motivation, you know, for me, again, emotions really, really hit the core of what people's motivation is about. And so we're not that in touch with the core motivation. We can talk ourselves in or out of it so quickly. And so we mostly do, and we stay in our minds so easily. So, yeah, we're not in touch so much with our emotional state, not in touch with our body. And that's how disease and dysfunction develop without our awareness. And also, again, the basic motivation that most of us have is either we're running away from something negative or we're chasing something positive. And most of the world is set up to do just that. And there's not a lot of support in any profession. And healing really needs to lead the way. But there's not support for tuning into our body, realizing what's there, acknowledging our issues and moving through them.
Well, you know, I had this very odd thought the other day because more and more people I know of have relatives with Alzheimer's. And when you listen to the discussions and the way our society treats it, which is to medicalize it and treat it like a disease, all of a sudden I started thinking about all these meditative practices whose sole goal is to be in the present. You know, not to be attached to your past, not to be daydreaming about your future, but to be present. And that's really sort of the hallmark of many Alzheimer's experience, is that there is no past, there is no future, there's only the present. And I thought, wow, wouldn't it be different if we treated it like a spiritual journey rather than a medical disease?
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah. In some ways, it is a model for how to be present right now and not have the past cluttering things up. But the programming that's still in the energy field does, in fact, obviously affect people, and we need to kind of get beyond that as well. But yeah, interesting observation.
Yeah, but it's also about the energies and the mix of people. I mean, and you mentioned, I mean, and I am one of those clinically extremely sensitive people, and I always have been. And even though I might have a ferocious will to do and can manifest and function in the world, there are certain parts of the world I can't function in, like football games or large gatherings or loud get-togethers where there's too much noise. And I find it totally and entirely overwhelming. I mean, the energetics of it is just, I get sick, I don't feel well. I mean, as a child, you just say, I have a stomach ache, I have a headache. You don't even know what it is. And it just sounds like some little kid whining and complaining. But in fact, it was an energetic reality. Or going into the grocery store, to this day, I can't stay long wherever there's fluorescent lighting. So these are real phenomena that we're all being exposed to more and more with electromagnetics, et cetera. So how do we as humans deal with all of this? Because it's not just emotions anymore. It's all kinds of frequencies bombarding us.
Yeah, it's actually unbelievable how much stuff we're dealing with on what level. And, and somebody who's super sensitive like you, then it's going to be tricky to be around that much disordered energy. And but I do think, with what I've seen with people, as I deal with a fair number of people with EMF sensitivities and stuff like that, it's still an emotional process that works. It's still energetic issues that make us vulnerable, and we can resolve those issues and become more able to function around that.
Can you give us an example of a process somebody can use, a general kind of thing that you've observed in many of the people you work with, and methods for working with that?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, the general process is, if you're aware of what the issue is, to move into, to focus on that feeling and to actually move into the feeling. The trickiest part, I'll come back to the process in a second, but the trickiest part, of course, is especially with something like EMF or something like that, where it's really difficult to understand what's my issue and how am I engaging with this stuff. A little bit easier, if it's a single individual and you're having trouble with that person, to discern what the method of engagement is and then to heal that issue up. But the emotional process is applicable to every level of energy. That's what's cool about it, is You know, you can heal your genetic programming. You can heal the issues that are related to EMF sensitivity with an emotional process. Yeah, the actual process, again, is simply feeling what's there. Now, let's say, maybe at a football game or something where there's, 100,000 people, a lot of competition, a lot of invalidation flying around. And what you would need to do is be able to ascertain how you're engaging with other people's invalidation. And then once you have that in your mind, then you'd be able to relax through that feeling and evolve it. I think, for instance, a lot of sensitive people are very caring and take a lot of responsibility for everything they feel, even if it's not their own issue. So if taking responsibility for other people pulls their energy into your space, then you've got to heal your definition of responsibility so that you're not vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. So for every human, identifying those things that are the most difficult, not the easiest, the most difficult for them, whether it's talking about their feelings or trying something new or, healing an old wound in the family, that those are really the things that need to be done in order for health to be accomplished, and health being balance, energetic balance.
Yeah, again, I'm getting back to the earlier definition. I would call health, being in the flow of your light coming mm-hmm. through your body and into your world,
mm-hmm.
And so anything that obstructs the flow of your light is going to be health impairing, and anything that's going to assist you in maintaining the flow of your light is going to be health supportive. So we do want to go into the most challenging issues. When you think about it kind of abstractly for a second here, it's like if we have negative feelings, we tend to avoid those things. We don't want to do something that makes us feel like a failure. We don't want to do something that makes us feel worthless. But if we could change kind of the connotation of those emotions, then it would open everything up for us. So if you could feel failure and enjoy it, then it would no longer have any power over you. And mm-hmm. that's kind of the goal of what we're doing here with the emotional work, is to allow it. So then we're not being pushed around by negative emotions. We're not being drawn to positive ones. Then we're freed up to be ourselves. And that's mm-hmm. when we can bring our light through.
Well, do you view emotions as light being sort of like received and then interpreted? We're interpreting the light through our experience, and that's what's tamping it down. Like, in many sacred societies, they teach that the goal of a self-managed human is to be able to say this and this, meaning it's not anger or no anger. It's okay, so there's that emotion, but it's no different than joy. It's just an emotion. It's just right. Passing through.
And so we're moving through our experience. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because some traditions say, it's no different than a stranger. Do you sit around and let the stranger run your life, or do you just notice the stranger walk by?
Okay.
And so that we treat our emotions as our dear companions, when in fact the having of the emotion is not the issue. It's how we respond to having it.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So your observation and the work you do with people is that in the knowing of the energy that's associated with the feeling, when it no longer controls us, doesn't make our heart beat fast, doesn't make us make a bad decision, it's just we can observe it and know it. Is that when it no longer has the power? It's just sort of...
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. Yep, perfect. So, yeah, then, again... We're light beings moving through our experience. When we identify with anything, positive or negative, we've stopped our flow.
Mm-hmm.
So if we identify with our body, identify with being male or female, identify with our thoughts, identify with negative feelings, but identify with positive feelings too, it stops our flow.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us build up our mental picture of ourselves so that we want to think of ourselves as good people and nice people and so forth. And so we keep trying to create that experience instead of let's let go of all those definitions. Let's just be ourselves, and whatever that is going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to release our attachment, our identification with all that stuff. And so like you were saying, there's joy, interesting. There's anger, that's interesting. And move through it, But the cool thing is that once you start moving through all these emotions, you actually begin to discover that really there is no real dichotomy. They actually are just manifestations of a single emotion. Like, there is only love. There is only care. It's just, when we heal all the positives and the negatives, the uncaring and the caring, and it turns out that they all dissolve and they become caring.
Mm-hmm.
Same with love and non-love.
Mm-hmm.
Move through it becomes
love.
That's
lovely. It's very much, I mean, your work is very much in harmony with so many sacred societies' efforts of, you know, showing self-management as being the optimal path. And whether you have one arm or 10 arms, it's really not the issue. It's the experience of the having the one arm or the 10 arms. We'll be right back. Our guest is Dr. Michael Weiner. His book, Light Medicine, Evolving Our Body, Our Life, and Our Planet, a Balboa Press 2013 release.
Hello, this is Ocean Robbins with foodrevolution.org. I'm the author of Voices of the Food Revolution. You're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Zoe Hieronymus.
Michael, in your book, you have some wonderful exercises of body postures that help us with our alignment, with proper energy movement through the body, and for a variety of different needs, whether it's the mental body or the emotional body or our divine body, etc. How did you go about discovering these or learning these?
I don't really remember.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny. It was part of my development where I was looking for easy ways to activate kind of the ultimate function for each of those aspects of our energy. And I hit on these poses that did, in fact, do what I had in mind. They work really well, and they're great for activating different aspects of the energy. And then, again, using the emotional process to move through whatever comes up. But,
well, it's interesting because, you and I have never spoken before, but I developed a system of movements based in astrology 30-some years ago, back in the 80s. And it dealt with the elementals of positive, negative, positive, positive, et cetera. And it all dealt with these angles of 30-degree angles or 120-degree angle. And you have a lot of that 45-degree angle, 135-degree angles. And all of these actually have meaning energetically, astrologically. So I just wondered whether it had been an intuitive discovery or you had studied with some Taoist movement expert who gave these to you. So they were an intuitive experiment and experience that you've passed on and practiced with others?
I never had exposure to that, but now that you're mentioning it, I do have some friends who are into astrology, and I should probably run that by them and see what they have to say about it. But I just kind of intuitively hit on those. I've got like over 600 different poses that I came up with for different, all kinds of different functions.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty fun.
But you also make clear that it's not necessarily having things done to us. I mean, obviously, if you're in an accident and you lose an arm, you want to stop the blood flow and et cetera, and take care of it surgically. But there's a deeper kind of healing that you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, like especially with things like trauma, you know, the energy of trauma is something that most of the time we're encouraged to adapt to. I mean,
mm-hmm.
yes, something happened. And that vibration of trauma ideally is something that we want to actually get out of our body. We don't want to adapt to the energies that are there. So, yes, even if we lose a limb, we still need, we need to do the emotional healing and obviously all the issues around losing a limb that might come up.
Mm-hmm.
But also, the actual accident and all the energy associated with that ideally would be resolved so that we don't adapt to those energies.
So when our culture gets riveted on what I refer to as the new reality TV show, will be called The Disaster Channel. And as we all turn into the Disaster Channel, as Earth changes become more and more prominent, and they actually, send out the teams to cover it or people with their cell phones while they work, et cetera. This is real trauma that we take in through our eyes. And as I've experienced, and I think as people understand now, beginning to understand, that it's not just, it's just a vision. It's just an image. It's just TV. That the body doesn't know the difference between experiencing it for real on its own, and just seeing it external through its eyes, even though we get conditioned not to respond through our adrenals quite the same way. How do you see this with a culture that's so visual now and so instantaneously, you know, celebratory of disaster?
Oh, no, for sure. We're definitely sharing the trauma, and like kind of what you were saying before with the social media. As soon as things happen, everybody knows about it, and everybody's body and energy begins to adapt to it. And, yeah, we're just because we can adapt to it really quickly doesn't mean it's that great for us. I mean, all those violent shows and everything, people are taking that in, and their nervous system is incorporating all that energy. And, I don't.
And then we see it manifest in kids who don't know why they just went and killed somebody.
Yeah.
They go, I didn't even know why I did it. You know, and then if you're taking these psychotic-like drugs, or the drugs that cause mania, et cetera, that are these psychological drugs, and mostly all the school shooters have been kids who have been on those, beyond just their problems, they then have chemical imbalances. So when you look at light and healing with light and the future of medicine in our life and in our coming century, how do you see this manifesting?
Well, I mean, first of all, back to what you were saying about the medication and stuff. I mean, the thing is that the issues are there, and the medications don't get rid of them. So, you know,
yeah.
It just pushes it somewhere else, and it's not surprising that people, especially kids, will act out on that stuff. They're not as adept at suppressing it as some of us adults.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we're if we really want to see medicine and healthcare move to a higher level, we sort of have to, you know, instead of like trying to just help people adapt to the dysfunction that they're experiencing and really flip it around. I mean, like most of the medications are used just to help people cope with the energy that they're dealing with. It's not about healing it.
And you also point out, as I've also pointed out, that medicine in our country, in the Western world, is a military model of not only acceptable risk, but as you point out, and as I've also pointed out, as have others, that it's a war on our bodies. You know, we war on others, we war on the land, and now it's a war on our bodies.
Yeah, it's a new battleground. Yeah, we're fighting bugs and we're fighting all the negative stuff. There's no sense of responsibility. And again, you know, even if, like, say, if, you know, if we get viruses or we get diseases going in our body or whatever, you know, it's the same thing with emotional issues in relationships. We engage with the energy somehow. That doesn't mean we're wrong, doesn't mean we're bad, doesn't mean we want the illness, but we have the power to change how we engage with that energy, and we can evict it. But yeah, we don't want to start creating another battle. I mean, it perpetuates non-responsibility for what's going on, and then also the victimization that you really can't do much about your life, you can't do much about your body, things just happen to you. And that's probably the most damaging part there. We want to flip that around and go, like, there actually is something you can do for yourself. You can take responsibility, just for what's happening, what you're experiencing, and get the energy out of your space if it's not your energy.
Yeah, there was a while in this kind of discussion where people felt they were responsible for the cancer they got and they should feel guilty that they gave themselves cancer.
Yes.
Versus, you know, life is about having experiences, and whatever has brought this situation into our life, it's an opportunity of growth. And that's why I have always honored, you know, the native tradition so, because they'll even say things like, if a person has a psychotic reaction to a drug, or a person has taken a psychedelic, or a person falls and hits their head and moves into an altered state, all of them are equally spiritual experiences that we treat as medical trauma. It's just a fascinating different kind of aperture of looking at these events that happen. And so I really like your perspective that empowers the individual to know that working with the emotions so that they don't control us, of feeding ourselves well, not just food, but energies of protecting, as I like to say, you know, protecting the holy gates to the temple of what you see and what you hear and what you smell and what you taste is really important.
Yeah. Again, going forward, you know, the health, the healing, if healing's at the center, then that teaches people a process, teaches people a way to deal with their experience in a positive way and move forward. And then medical health care would be more of an adjunct, which would support people and manage situations while people are healing whatever they can heal.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather see it that way than, you know, movement like healing as it is now, being sort of more of a fringe thing.
Mm-hmm. No, it's very, and you also talk about the intention to heal, and because I've interviewed so many people in the consciousness laboratories, of course, intention becomes the engine of absolutely everything, whether it's non-local consciousness or, you know, cooking a pot of rice.
Yeah, the intention to heal is what we do when we're faced with an issue. Do we move into it and move through it, or do we kind of try to get away from it? So, yeah, for me, the intention to heal is like the critical element as to whether how we deal with our experience and whether we're going to actually move through it effectively.
Mm-hmm. I heard something interesting. We're almost out of time, but I'm curious what you think of this. I heard that for people who have illness now and then and they recover and they go through it, that they live longer lives because they're more adaptable and that the immune system is more adaptable.
That's interesting.
Isn't that an interesting thing? I went, well, I'm in good shape.
Good for you.
Good for me. I've had lots of challenges.
I think, you know, my goal with, the immune system is to teach it how to function differently. Your immune system, you know, our immune system is pretty bad, actually. It just lets everybody in.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're pretty much, so we want to teach our immune system, and that's, again, where we need to process the issues there that allow foreign energy into our space. The energy doesn't belong in our space, and so we can teach our immune system to kick it out. And so, yeah, if you've been through a disease or an illness, your body is obviously resilient, and you've learned how to strengthen yourself.
Interesting. We are going to say goodnight at this moment. Thank you so much, Dr. Michael Weiner. That's the end of the hour. 21st Century Radio is produced by Hieronymus & Company. Our executive producer and research assistant is Laura Kortner. I'm Dr. Zohara Hieronymus, and remember, we do need more love in the world.